Welcome, market participants, to another Three Things in Credit. I'm Van Hesser, Chief Strategist at KBRA. Each week, we bring you three things impacting credit markets that we think you should know about. Well, it was good while it lasted. Speaking, of course, of the everything rally, the one triggered by the Fed's shocking 180-degree monetary pivot back in December. Well, that rally apparently has ended, with stocks and bonds suffering their worst first day of a new year performance in more than two decades. Do we care? Of course not. Markets are supposed to do that in response to the rally we just enjoyed. Kind of akin to all this dry January talk I keep hearing about. In any event, welcome back to the podcast and Happy New Year. All right, let's get at it. So this week, our three things are, one, the banks are all right. Questions as to the viability of the business model are misplaced. Two, sentiment split. Folks are split on the recession call and risk valuations. Here's what that means. And three, financial conditions. They might not be as loose as you've heard. Here's a measure worth considering. All right, let's dig a bit deeper. The banks are all right. Banks need a new publicist. Over the break, I noticed a couple of headlines, like this one. Why might it be time to buy banks, just not in America, warned The Economist. And this one from The Wall Street Journal. Banking crisis plays out at America's smallest lenders. Well, the so-called crisis is what helped bring down Silicon Valley Bank and First Republic Bank last spring. Gross mismanagement of funding concentrations and interest rate risk in the face of niche customer strategies. Two banks, good-sized, certainly called into question shortcomings in regulatory oversight. But that's two banks out of 4,700 banks at the time. The very definition of idiosyncratic risk. So the Journal article highlighted a $5 billion asset community bank in Texas, where 61% of its assets are in securities. Turns out there's not a whole lot of loan growth in East Texas. Equity capital is negative under the weight of $1 billion in AOCI, which records unrealized profits and losses on various financial transactions, including available for sale securities, which is what industry bank shares holds. Still full of low yielding securities, the bank is barely profitable. It is pursuing a capital raise and exploring strategic alternatives, according to the piece. The article goes on to point out that net income at community banks fell 20% in Q3. By our calculation, we come up with down 14%. In any event, while profitability for the group, as measured by return on assets, is down from 1.4% a year ago to 1.1% in the latest quarter, we wouldn't consider that all that concerning, given that anything above 0.8% is generally fine. Doesn't sound like a crisis to me. How about the FDIC's list of so-called problem banks? For the uninitiated, those are institutions with, quote, financial, operational, or managerial weaknesses that threaten their continued financial viability, unquote. Well, that group totals 44 out of 4,614 banks as of September 30th, or less than 1% of the total. By the way, that number of problem institutions is down from 51 prior to the pandemic. So how are investors viewing the sector? Well, shareholders decidedly rotated out after the March events. But it turns out that the bank stocks have come roaring back in the fourth quarter. Off of recent lows in October, large cap banks are up 33% to 83% of where they were before the March failures. Well, that probably is attributable to the fact that the largest banks are really not exposed to the kind of risks that undid Silicon Valley and First Republic. So how are the regionals and community banks faring? You know, those facing the crisis that the Journal article references. Turns out they too are up smartly, 30% from those October lows to 87% of where they were pre-Silicon Valley. Now, will there be a few industry bank shares out there? Of course. It's a big universe of banks, and some smaller institutions are clearly limping along. And will some smaller banks struggle under the weight of the secular shift in commercial real estate? Of course, but this idea that the community and regional banking model is somehow deficient or represents a systemic issue is just not accurate. Risk markets have awakened to that reality. All right, on to our second thing, 2024's sentiment split. Now, combing through all of those year-end outlooks, we noticed a really interesting pattern. The world of strategists and economists and other assorted forecasters is split. Split on recession likelihood and split on whether or not the S&P 500 will grow in 2024. Now let's start with the outlook for recession. For all the talk of a soft landing, we are more than a bit curious as to what the Fed sees that caused it to change its narrative at the December FOMC meeting from higher for longer to three cuts in 2024, where the graph of the policy rate changes from the proverbial table mountain, higher for longer, back to the Eiffel Tower, quickly up and quickly down. The question that has to be asked, one that seemingly got lost in all the market drama, is the Fed signaling rate cuts because its work is done and it's time to get back to normal, or it may have overdone it, as it typically does, and it will have to stimulate the patient? The answer to that question gets at soft landing versus hard landing. And for what it's worth, 50% of economists surveyed by Bloomberg in December after the latest FOMC meeting see a harder landing, recession, in 2024. The Bloomberg consensus estimate for the full year growth in 2024 is 1.3%. It's a meaningful drop from 2023's estimated 2.4% and below the Fed's longer-term growth estimate of 1.8%. Still, all that is growth, even if recession pops up for a period along the way. So maybe it's not surprising then that about half of Wall Street strategists, 55% for those keeping score, believe the S&P 500 index will grow in 2024, according to another survey conducted by Bloomberg in December. The median of the 18 strategists surveyed works out to be 48.50 for the S&P, which would be a rather lackluster year-over-year gain of 1.7%. I suppose part of a gain that might have occurred in 2024 got pulled into 2023. Now here's what's interesting. None of those 18 strategists are calling for a contraction in earnings growth for the S&P 500 in 2024, assuming 2023 comes in at FactSet's consensus of $221 a share. Still, the group on average is not expecting much in the way of growth, with the median estimate coming in at $231 a share, a mere 4.5% better than 2023's expected level. This is, by the way, a top-down view. From a bottoms-up perspective, analysts are more bullish, as you would expect. They're looking for earnings of $246 a share. That's some 11.6% above 2023's result. So all of this helps to frame out market expectations for 2024. We would summarize those as follows. 1. Growth is slowing, and whether or not we actually meet the Bureau of Economic Research's definition of recession or not is not the point. The point is market participants believe that we are likely to approach stall speed for a quarter or two in what figures to be a sub-potential year. Nevertheless, the possibility of a more significant growth contraction continues to feel like a tail risk. 2. The earnings recession is in the rearview mirror. Earnings, at least with regard to the S&P 500, reflect the long lead time managements have had in preparing for downturn, as well as a belief that inflation is under control and demand will remain reasonably strong. And that, of course, feeds into our third point. Risk valuations are full. Priced for perfection? Well, not quite. But we would expect volatility to pick up as markets digest what the effects of all of that monetary tightening are shaping up to be. All right, on to our third thing, financial conditions. Now, throughout much of the fourth quarter, much was made over the fact that financial conditions were actually loosening, despite the Fed's best efforts to tighten. All of that talk of a soft landing on better-than-expected economic data, as well as improvement in taming the inflation scourge, had a hand in this. And unlike some, we have long been in the camp of believing in the long and variable lagged effects of monetary tightening. And we were more than a bit concerned that tightening beyond just raising the policy rate was taking place. After all, the Fed was continuing to run down its balance sheet, and the banks were tightening lending standards post the March bank failures in order to size up and shore up their funding bases. So, simply looking at the policy rate doesn't capture fully the effects of tightening, broadly defined. We find it to be more useful to look at the proxy funds rate. That's something published by the San Francisco Fed. This measure, think of it as kind of Fed funds plus, uses 12 market variables that take into account things like the Fed's forward guidance and balance sheet operations. The proxy funds rate peaked this past summer at 7.1% at a time when the effective Fed funds rate was 5.1%. By year end, the proxy funds rate had fallen to 6.3%, but was still a full point above the Fed funds rate. So this still restrictive environment is consistent with the slowing growth we and plenty of others, including the Fed, see in 2024. Now that should be good news on the all-important inflation front, but probably is less welcome for growth. But at this stage of the cycle, investors should take that trade. Safe to say that just about all of us are tired of the inflation story. So there you have it. Three things in credit. One, the banks are all right. Loan quality is holding up well, and concerns over contagion from the March failures seems to be a thing of the past. Two, sentiment split. Folks are split on the recession call and risk valuations, but strong consensus on earnings growth strengthens the argument for a soft landing. And three, financial conditions. The proxy funds rate is a reminder that taming inflation remains job one. As always, thanks for joining. Don't forget to check in on KBRA.com for our ratings reports and our latest research. Welcome back, and best of luck in the new year. We'll see you next week. Hello, listeners. Join me, Van Hesser, KBRA's chief strategist, for in-depth conversations with credit experts in my new monthly podcast, Leading Voices in Credit, where I'll interview market professionals on the latest trends in credit markets. That's Leading Voices in Credit with Van Hesser. Subscribe now.